We welcome our sports commentator today. It's Dana Johansson. Morning, Dana.
Kia ora, Catherine.
Dana is Stuff's national correspondent specialising in sport. Now, there's plenty going on in the sport of cycling this morning.
Oh, absolutely. Cycling New Zealand just appears to be in utter chaos right now. Obviously, there's an ongoing inquiry following the tragic loss of Olivia Podmore in August. And now this morning, an extraordinary development has been revealed that there has been an investigation into Cycling New Zealand for an integrity breach at the Tokyo Olympic Games. And that has led to the resignation of the sport's high performance director. That's Martin Barris. So I understand that the breach relates to the process that was undertaken to replace an athlete during the Games. The rules around it are that you can only replace an athlete during the Games if in case of injury or illness. And Cycling New Zealand have breached the rules there by obviously not following those rules. And they've breached the code of conduct for the UCI, the International Federation. It also breaches IOC participation regulations and the NZOC. So, yes, quite an extraordinary development this morning. And you have to imagine, you know, it seems like, I guess, quite a small thing, but you have to think that of the huge impact that has on the athletes that are involved in this incident. And clearly an athlete here has been denied an opportunity quite unfairly.
And the resignation at the top also that's out this morning, that the high performance director, this is directly related to this, or is it part of a wider story?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was this incident that has prompted the resignation of Martin Barris.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But clearly there's been questions over the high performance culture and their organisation in general following the loss of Olivia Podmore. That inquiry is still ongoing. Mike Heron and Sarah Lieberman are leading that panel. And that report is not due until February. So clearly there's probably a lot more information to come out in that report. This is just kind of one sort of intriguing sidebar, I guess, to a wider culture within Cycling New Zealand. I understand that earlier this week we heard that the CEO, Jacques Landry, has also resigned. He's returning to Canada. He cited family reasons for that resignation, and he clearly has a lot of support from the board, who spoke quite glowingly in the release of his resignation. There's been quite a lot sort of quiet clear out of other high performance staff since Tokyo as well. I think there's been three other high performance program managers that have left. It's not unusual to have a high volume of staff turnover after an Olympic Games, but certainly with the kind of turmoil that Cycling New Zealand appear to be in, you have to wonder if some of this is linked to that as well.
So where are we at with this independent investigation? Is today's events and the integrity breach that's been identified the end of it, or is it on, you know, is there more to come?
I understand there could be more to come. There could possibly be further resignations to come. In terms of the separate investigation into Cycling New Zealand, this independent inquiry, they have not been tasked to look at specific complaints. So any kind of complaints that arise through this process will be referred to the appropriate authorities. The task of the panel is to look at the broader culture, and they've got quite a strict terms of reference to look at there. And it's all about sort of athlete welfare, that the organisation's general approach, its systems and processes it has around looking after its athletes. There's a little bit on centralisation. Obviously, one of the big things to emerge following the death of Olivia Podmore was whether, you know, allowing young kids to leave their hometowns and their support networks back home and sort of put in this bubble in Cambridge is the right thing to do. Do they need better support systems around these athletes? So those are kind of those bigger overarching questions that I think will be sort of looked at in the independent inquiry. But certainly today's announcement is quite extraordinary.
Where does it leave the athletes, actually? Because, yes, there's turmoil and there's obviously issues that are being identified and need to be resolved. But they're also, you know, I don't know what stage of their training cycle that they're at the moment, but this is... These kind of leaders, these kind of high performance directors and trainers are pivotal to their ongoing professional career and development. And, you know, they're going to be left wondering who's next, what's next, and importantly, who the new people are going to be as part of this transition.
Oh, absolutely. And as Cycling New Zealand said in their statement this morning, that their focus very much is on trying to support those athletes in that environment. I'd imagine they would have had their time off post Tokyo. For some of those development riders, they would be sort of competing or training right through. So, yeah, you can imagine it must be utter chaos down at the velodrome at the moment, and so much uncertainty for those athletes. So, yeah, when we talk about their commitment to athlete welfare, you know, they're discovering it in real time how this organisation responds to a crisis.
All right. Thank you for it, and thanks for the updates as this is happening just this morning, as we said. Let's look at the rugby code now and rugby football code, and for both the men's and women's New Zealand teams. Oh, it's not what they're used to in terms of results, isn't it? And the All Blacks, of course, the losses to France and to Ireland, the heat really now back on the decision to stick with Ian Foster. How are you reading what might happen from here? Is that commitment to a point through to the World Cup set in stone?
Yeah, well, I mean, it does appear to be. He has been appointed. He is on contract, but it isn't unusual for All Black coaches to leave mid-contract if the pressure gets too much. You know, I think back to the time that Foster was appointed post the 2019 World Cup, and he probably was a little bit of an unpopular decision among some people. And I guess every failure or every loss that happens is sort of seen as another more evidence that it was the wrong decision. There's certainly some people in the Scott Robertson camp who think that he should have been appointed All Blacks coach back in 2019. So I do feel that possibly for Foster, you know, he's been tested in extraordinary ways, unlike any other All Blacks coach, hasn't he? I mean, it was such a brutal reintroduction to the Northern Hemisphere rugby, this recent tour, and you have to sort of think in the perspective from the perspective that he. I think it's been probably 2 years since I've had exposure to that type of rugby, and possibly we're seeing now the impact that having sort of 2 seasons of pretty much an all-domestic Super Rugby competition. I'm aware that obviously the teams did have crossover matches this year with Australia, but they do play quite a similar style in some ways. So possibly you look at that lack of exposure to the Northern Hemisphere rugby, who, you know, they were quite brutal. You know, quite frankly, the Fords got beaten up over there, didn't they? So possibly it's that lack of exposure that has really cost them.
It is. I know the Scott Robertson camp have long campaigned, but there's others, of course, holding out for the possibility Jamie Joseph might be in the mix somewhere, and others now talking about Joe Schmidt, of course, who had so much success with Ireland. And, you know, wasn't available for the All Blacks role. The question is whether that might change in the next while. One of the things that strikes me, and we've had this discussion previously, is there seems to be questions being asked that are being answered with old answers. And this is the thing, like if you're preparing for a World Cup campaign, do you need to reinvent your game? Some of the commentary I've seen is that essentially the Northern Hemisphere is outplaying the All Blacks at their own game, and the question there is, where do you go next?
Yeah, absolutely. Reinvention is, you know, all the top coaches are able to reinvent themselves and change up their game plan. There seems to have been a really real push from New Zealand rugby over the last kind of decade or so after they went through, you know, a handful of coaches in the early 2000s. There seems to be this push for continuity, and they don't like to be seen to sort of be making these snap decisions and chopping and changing coaches. And we saw that sort of post the Graham Henry era, where he was given another crack at it after 2007. So that has been the thinking for a long time, and I just cannot see New Zealand rugby making a change to their coaching team at this stage. If they do, it would have to be very soon, and allow a new coach to come in and give them a couple of years at the helm and really stamp their mark on the team. The other thing I think we're seeing as well is we just don't seem to know who Ian Foster's preferred 23 is, and perhaps to having players come in and out and being allowed those sabbaticals and those interim years between World Cups, it doesn't really help with, you know, sort of establish a good top line.
Yeah, it's an interesting observation. Now, the Black Ferns themselves have had but they just didn't play to their normal, not only was it the losses, they just didn't play to their normal standards. And what are the questions we have out of this? Yes, it's the same argument. They haven't played for ages. They haven't been able to get together. There's a pandemic going on. However, are there wider questions?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think the Black Ferns exist on a completely different economic stratosphere to their England rugby side. After the 2017 World Cup, England made a decision, and even prior to that, actually, they made a decision to really invest in its women's 15s program. They are basically all full-time professionals, and they also have the advantage of a really, really top-notch Six Nations competition as well. So, they have just come on in leaps and bounds in the last 4 years, and probably we didn't see it because there was that 2 year gap in competition where the Black Ferns weren't playing tests. So it's come as quite a shock to some people, but for those that have been paying attention, not so much.
Yeah, and again, the question is, can they play catch up, as you say, before next year's World Cup? Have we got enough road left?
Yeah, there are some people that think possibly the horse is already bolted there and it's impossible to play catch up with England now that they've basically had 4 years. They're 4 years ahead in their development. The Black Ferns are, and the Black Ferns have now got less than a year. I do think the introduction of a new Super Rugby competition for women, Super Rugby Aupiki, next year will be helpful in terms of getting really high quality competition, domestic competition. But almost that seems to be a little bit of a half-assed measure, if I can say that, because, you know, it's a four-team competition. They're basically playing a one round robin and that's it. So, I think definitely NZ Rugby need to look at the schedule for the Black Ferns next year and that wider training group as well, and ensure that they are able to have a lot of quality competition in the lead up to the World Cup, because obviously, you know, they are the defending world champions, they're five-time world champions, and this was finally a home World Cup for them, where they're hoping to get their hands on the trophy in front of a home crowd.
You want to triumph, absolutely. Because it's always such a boast for the participation in the sport as well. Dana, we talked at length with our Asia correspondent this morning about the disappearance of the Chinese star Peng Shuai and her apparent appearance since. You want to look at this from the perspective of the IOC.
Yeah, there's been a lot of criticism over the way the IOC has handled it. Obviously, they are seen as an international leader there, and they have the opportunity to sort of come down hard on China. Remember that Beijing are hosting the Winter Olympics in February, and people have been crying out for the IOC to apply sanctions to China. But they have preferred the option of quiet diplomacy, they call it. So they have sort of been trying to quietly make things happen. And then we had the weird story earlier this week where Peng Shuai appeared on a video conference with the IOC President Thomas Bach and assured him that everything was okay. But sort of human rights activists are saying, you know, how can we be sure that there was no coercion involved in that, or she wasn't being, prevented from saying what she wants to say. People really are getting quite frustrated at the IOC's approach to that. And in conjunction to that, the way National Olympic Committees are also starting to deal with it. I understand that Australia and the US and the UK are all considering what they call a diplomatic boycott of the Beijing Winter Olympics, which, to be clear, does not involve not sending a team to the Beijing Olympics. It just means that the sort of top brass won't go alongside, which would be normally occurring during Olympics. So I'm not sure if that's going to trouble the Chinese too much, to be fair.
Just finally, canoe racing New Zealand. I saw this story too, and it really caught my attention. One of the absolute superstars of the sport is subject to what kind of a process? What do we know?
Yeah, it was quite a strange story. Canoe Racing New Zealand posted notification on their website earlier this week that one of their double Olympic champions, Alan Thompson, one of the heroes of the sort of early 80s era alongside Ian Ferguson and Paul McDonald, they are seeking to expel him as a member from Canoe Racing New Zealand based on alleged what they're calling sexualized remarks towards female participants in canoe racing. I think these incidents stem back to 2014 and 1998, and one is said to have occurred in an official canoe racing event or an international tour. I find it extraordinary that they're posting this quite publicly. They're making quite a public display of trying to expel one of its members. So apparently there will be a special general meeting next month on the 22nd of December, where members or delegates from the 16 clubs will vote on whether this guy should be a member of canoe racing going forward. So, yeah, it will to be a fly on a wall in that meeting would be extraordinary.
Dana, thank you. Dana Johansson, sports commentator, Stuff's national correspondent specialising in sport.